The first case this morning is the State of Michigan versus the Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Allen.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Assistant Attorney General John Fridaglione on behalf of the State of Michigan and its Department of Environmental Quality, and I would like to emphasize three basic mechanics at play in this case. The first is the additional duties that are imposed on the State of Michigan by way of this new Class 1 redesignation.
Could we pause on that then and explain to me why these are additional duties, given the fact that there are other Class 1 areas that Michigan is already taking into account?
Certainly, because this new Class 1 area captures parts of the state that are not captured by the other two.
But the process is the same.
Here's the difference in the process. With the other two Class 1 areas, they have what amounts to a substitute for an implementation plan. They have a very thick book of regulations on how you will satisfy that for the Seney National Park and the Isle Royale, the two other Class 1 areas that are in play in Michigan, they have thick regulations that give guidance to the Department of Environmental Quality on how to satisfy those. That's the key to this case. That's what's missing with this Class 1 redesignation.
Of course, the government completely disagrees with you on that.
Certainly.
You can move on with your argument, but I want to just alert you to the fact that one of the things that concerns me about your position from the point of view of standing is, try as I might, I can't find any interest that the State of Michigan is asserting other than the interest in delaying the regulatory process, because it seems to me even Michigan concedes that if there were to be a tribal implementation plan for the Pottawatomie area, then you would just have to find a way to make it work. And first, you know, there are a lot of reasons why one could debate that, but it seems to me you have no underlying substance in this argument aside from the interest in delay, which strikes me as not a legitimate, legally cognizable interest.
Right, and well, I can give you that substance. That substance is the very thing you're talking about. Without an implementation plan explaining how to satisfy this new Class 1, unlike the other Class 1s that have them, the department has the following additional duties, which go to standing to show that it does impact us, as well as to show this is not just some administrative missive that has no impact. These are the additional duties. When an application comes in now, they have to specifically take into account this new Class 1 area, but without these guidelines, the Department of Environmental Quality has these additional duties on its own without any guidelines. Review that application and determine whether the initial air mod modeling, which is the initial model that's used, if it's within 100 kilometers, will satisfy this new Class 1. They can't go to a book of regulations that helps them decide that.
What about 40 CFR section 52.21, which you have now conceded you're not challenging?
You mean the federal PSD regulations that they've...
Well, exactly. I mean, the federal government argues that there's a federal implementation plan, not only here, but in many places in the country where tribal plans have not been adopted.
That's just one set of regulations. That does not cover everything that may satisfy this new Class 1 area. That's the federal PSD regulation.
What does it not cover?
There are AQRVs, for example, the Prevention of Significant Deterioration set of regulations, while a major part of any implementation plan, are just one part. We have air quality related values. Those are special concerns for a Class 1. The other Class 1s have this large book that explains what you can do to satisfy the air quality related value concerns. They have guidelines on what sort of calculations you do to satisfy the other Class 1s. This Class 1 is devoid of anything short of the MOA between Wisconsin and the tribe. That's the closest they come to any guidance on how you satisfy disputes over what will satisfy this Class 1. You're getting to the heart of it, Your Honor.
But the other issue, when you say that, and a lot of your brief made me think of this as well, is it sounds very much like this is an anticipatory. You're foreseeing all sorts of problems in the future that may or may not come to pass, and I'm uncomfortable with the open-endedness of this argument. Okay.
Well, these problems have already come to pass. The state of Michigan has already been sued once over not properly considering how to satisfy the Forest County Potawatomi Class 1 area. It's in the briefing. It's in the supplemental authorities.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can take that into account. But anyway, that's... Let's see.
And there's two other... The reason there's already these duties already happening, concrete things, is there's two other permits, one called Cleveland Cliffs, another in Mansalona. These are near but outside, I believe, both the 100-kilometer area. And there are additional duties to that the DEQ right now spends time and money figuring, okay, we don't have a guidance book to go to here for this Class 1 area, the Forest County. How do we make sure that we're satisfying them? They have to spend extra time calculating, you know, basically guessing at that. They'll use, I would imagine, practicality would dictate, we hope it's similar to what the other Class 1s want. But this is happening right now, Your Honor. There is time and energy being spent both defending cases, at least one so far that we've been sued on, and taking time to figure out how do we satisfy this Class 1. There are no guidelines, so there's additional extra time.
I don't see how this is different, though, than an indirect challenge to something like 52.21, in that you're saying, well, we're having to spend time in the agency processing, if you will, these applications you're getting for stationary source permits, and you're not sure what restrictions you need to incorporate in those permits so that the Class 1 areas within the ambit of that source will be affected. But you know, you want more regulations passed somehow. I don't think you really care whether they're federal regulations or tribal regulations or state regulations or anything else. It's more regulations that you want.
Actually, it must come from the proper authority. That would be the land manager. As soon as that is clarified, who is the land manager?
Well, that's the federal government for Indian tribes unless or until it's a tribe.
And that is why Congress fully recognized the importance of having an implementation plan in place first before you go to redesignate.
But Congress never said that you have to. Indeed, Congress said, as I read all these statutes, the opposite, that you don't always have to have a tribal implementation plan, as you, I'm sure, well know. The situation of a Native American groups in the United States, federally recognized tribes, is quite different from that of states or others. There's a very complex relation between them and the federal government.
Certainly. And Congress said you don't have to treat tribes as identical to states. But they have specific provisions saying, but when you do a redesignation, a tribal land redesignation, you shall follow in all respect Section 164E, which says you shall put it in the applicable implementation plan.
And what's applicable? That's the thing. I mean, if the applicable plan could be the federal plan, then they've done that.
Correct, if there were one. But we submit, as found in Arizona v. EPA, a case right on point here, because it both decided that you can't use a federal implementation plan in lieu of a tribal implementation plan.
But that case was decided before the statutes were changed and before the regulations were passed, clarifying the relation.
But what those amendments were was saying don't treat states identical. What's very important is...
Why isn't that a very important change, though, compared to the legal background that was in place when the Arizona case was decided?
It is very important, but Congress made a point of saying, well, we're going to say don't treat tribes, you need not treat tribes as identical to states. We're going to put in provisions that say, but here is how you do a redesignation of tribal land. Didn't need to do that. Once they said, under what's called the TAR rules, these new statute provisions you talk about, they said you don't have to treat tribes as identical to states. They could have ended there, because in fact they say in any case where it's administratively infeasible to treat them identical to states, you can treat the tribe differently. They did not, that would apply to redesignation. But wait, Congress went on to say, with regard to redesignation, both state or tribe, it must be the applicable plan, because they want the proper authority already in place with a huge body of regulations to make sure the Clean Air Act is accomplished. And then.
But why would they have wanted the perverse result that you can degrade to your heart's content until the tribe issues a plan, and then, and only then, can the non-degradation rules take effect? That's what you're really arguing for.
No, what we're saying is, while there is a stopgap measure, the PSD program is in place. Okay.
And you can't, and you're saying the tribes are absolutely forbidden from, even though they did properly ask for the Class 1 redesignation, they went through the hearings, they went through every single procedural hoop they were supposed to go through under the statute. You're saying, nonetheless, Michigan should be able to allow that air to degrade up to the Class 2 level until the tribe is able to come up with a tribal implementation plan.
I'm saying that's what the law indicates. What the law indicates, and it's not just me, actually, EPA themselves recognize that they really should do TIPS. And as is pointed out in the briefing, Region 10 has gone and made, the federal government, EPA, is supposed to do FIPS. And they have done that for, the federal government did the right thing after, chronologically speaking, just as this Arizona v. EPA case was coming out, that's when they did these new rules, these new statute provisions that changed things. And they also, at that very time, EPA itself, Region 10, went and did full-blown federal implementation plans for the tribes. They have it set up by region. So Region 10 did it. What we have here is...
So you agree that if we were to decide that what EPA has done here is enough to qualify as a FIP, then Michigan can't prevail?
No.
Because I'm trying to figure out, what exactly are you challenging? What agency action, agency statutory interpretation, and what's the standard of review? Because, of course, EPA argues Chevron throughout.
Okay, what we're saying is it is arbitrary and capricious for that. The act we're challenging is the approval of this Class 1 redesignation without following the procedural requirement that Congress has laid out that, as particular here, a tribal redesignation must be made part of a applicable plan.
If you have standing to do this, you are saying that somewhere, although it's not stated in so many words in either law or regulation, somewhere there's a requirement that there can be no redesignation of land within tribal boundaries without a TIP.
Well, it's Section 164.
It doesn't say that exactly, as you've been quoting it.
Well, I read it to say that 164C says that a tribal redesignation must follow all of the rules in 164E. And it's first that 164C says it has to be the appropriate Indian governing body. And the reason that's important is they want whoever's in charge of this geographic area, they want to be the administrator of it.
And so they redesignated. I think that's...
And the way that works is they request the redesignation. The wording is...
And they went through the whole series of requirements. They had their hearings. They told everybody about it.
Correct.
Michigan came and testified. Wisconsin...
Correct.
Showed up, everybody.
And the objections that there was no TIP existing were made part of that record, and we're here today to decide. In short, if Arizona v. EPA still has any bearing, and we feel it still controls, that even though after Arizona v. EPA, Congress made new provisions, they made a point of saying you need not treat tribes as identical to states, which is in itself somewhat telling. You don't need to treat them identical. And we're going to point out for redesignation, we want to make sure there's a body of regulations with an identified enforcement authority so people know how to comply with that new Class 1 because Class 1s are special. Okay, it's special protection. So I submit to you, Your Honor, that Section 164 C and E, if I have that, it's within 164, C and E, are what specifically say, and this is consistent with the Arizona decision, that require a TIP.
164E also says when there's been a request for dispute resolution, as there was with Michigan, that you're bound by the way the administrator resolves that issue, since you did not wind up with a consensual arrangement as Wisconsin did.
Correct, as long as that is the decision by the administrator is within the act. So we're saying we're bound, except it was improper. That's exactly the case before you, that dispute resolution process resolved with a determination.
So what provision E are you looking at?
Well, if you...
E is about resolution of disputes between states.
Correct.
And Indian tribes.
And near the bottom of that section is what you've just quoted, is that if the...
Administrator shall resolve the dispute.
Correct. What I'm indicating, though, is that the law requires that it be resolved legally within the bounds of the act.
Well, and this determination becomes part of the plan, blah, blah, blah.
Correct. And we submit to you there's no legitimate plan as Arizona found specifically too, and that does apply here. That hasn't changed by the PSD program is not a FIP because they didn't follow the Section 110 requirements for how you do a FIP. But also, to get to this finer point you're talking about.
Explain again. I know you did this earlier. There's no tribal plan, but there is a federal plan. Why doesn't that satisfy?
Because it's not a true implementation plan. A true implementation plan is a huge body of regulations that covers not just the prevention of significant deterioration program, which is how you keep the air from getting worse. You're allowed a certain amount to get worse. But there are other. There's for air toxics. There's all sorts of communications requirements. There's how you do the air modeling. Other implementation plans or guidances to them say, you know, instead of doing that really complicated air modeling, if you pass the, there's a tiered way to accomplish for these agencies to work together to determine whether you've satisfied the Class 1. Without this tiered guideline that applies in other Class 1s, the state of Michigan has additional duties that it would not have had the administrator made the proper decision under the statute and say, I can't approve this because there is no implementation plan.
So then how are we to take this 4911, which says, you know, the federal plan should be used if you don't have a tribal plan? Are you, you know, because the language of that reg doesn't say except when it's redesignation or except when everything hasn't been spelled out.
That there, when it's presuming, that provision is presuming there is a federal implementation plan that's been created, not the PSD program, if I understand your question. It is saying, and again, the simplest way to look at how this should work is look to Region 10. It's cited in there. I could give you the appendix pages. Region 10 did it right. What we have here is the Region 5, for whatever its reason, chose to revert back to the expedient way of doing it, leaving the state of Michigan, and as far as our concern goes, and other locations, but the state of Michigan to have to reckon with a new Class 1, that's fine. We're not against Class 1s. But with no guidance, without that guidance, there's much more work that goes into determining which sort of air modeling, what sort of data you put in it. Do you go to 100 kilometers? Do you go to 300 kilometers? You have to consider the volume of the admission, the types of admission, and where it's located.
The federal government to lay those requirements on states, is it?
Excuse me?
It's not unusual for the federal government to lay those requirements like that on states.
No, and it's not just about the delay, though. That's why Congress recognized the important distinction between having your implementation plan and then having redesignation under it and made it clear. We're going over these same provisions again, but that for tribal for state or tribal redesignation, you have the applicable plan. Regarding tribal redesignation, this holds true, and it holds true even given the other provision that you need not treat tribes as identical to states. So what we have here, in short, is Region 5 choosing not to follow the lead of Region 10 to communicate to the world, and particularly those jurisdictions that will be burdened, if you will, by a new Class 1, to lay out how you satisfy the Class 1. So we're not saying ultimately, we're of course not against Class 1s or against that cleaner air. We're just saying it's imposed additional duties on us, additional duties we wouldn't have if the Class 1, as required under the Act, were created as part of an implementation plan far bigger than just the PSD program, but that tells us all sorts, quite frankly, the modeling is what takes the time. What sort of computer modeling do you use? It's very expensive time and effort. I'm told the estimates are from 2 days to 2 weeks it can take to figure out what do we require of the applicant.
These additional burdens relate to your standing argument?
Absolutely. We're saying that we think it's discernist at best to say that there's no distance related to a Class 1. It's quite clear that 100 kilometers has been used as policy, and 300 kilometers, quite frankly, it's unavoidable, in my opinion, to say that there's now not a 300-kilometer distance because this new CalPUF air model is deemed reliable up to 300 kilometers. I'm just about at the end of my time.
You have a minute left for rebuttal.
Okay. I'd submit to you that we've hit these major points, that the burdens are there, and they're not burdens that Michigan would have in any case. They're burdens that are greatly complicated. The fact that there are burdens at all means we have the standing. It impacts our air program, our air modelers that sit there and do the work. Two, those additional duties are far harder than they would be if it were done properly and there were an implementation plan or some body of guidance, as there are with other Class 1s, so that these modelers have a tiered approach to how they satisfy this Class 1. And ultimately, if you want the example of how it's done, in the briefing, it's all there. You look to Region 10, and we ask that you not allow EPA to revert back to the way that they did it before the Arizona v. EPA case.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosen?
May it please the Court. In our view, this is a pretty easy case. It's administrative law 101. But we don't get to attend that class because we don't think there's jurisdiction here. Michigan admits that they're not suing Parents Patriae. They're not suing on behalf of their citizens or a source who might have a permit. They're suing on, they're alleging only their injury to the state itself. Under Lujan, the standards are pretty clear. There must be a personal, concrete injury, and it must not be speculative. That's important. The second thing that needs to be shown.
Could I stop there and ask you? I mean, it sounds to me then that you are rejecting, in a sense, the burden imposed, as Judge Kaney was almost alluding to, imposed by unfunded mandates, essentially. That's what it sounded to me like this was all amounting to, because the regulations in 52.21 aren't accompanied by lots of other regulations, or there isn't a tribal implementation plan. It's taking the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality longer and more person hours and more effort to process these applications. And you're saying that's just not a legally cognizable injury.
That's
it
true.
Seems like it's quite plausible that's happening. I mean, I don't have any reason to doubt that. But
well, first of all, that's not happening. It's completely speculative. Their allegation is, their injury is that their regulators are confused. They're confused not about this redesignation. The redesignation was pretty simple. It was a land description. The following land is now Class 1 within the state of Wisconsin. There's nothing confusing about that. Their confusion, their alleged confusion, goes to other statutes and other regulations. Goes to AQRBs and FLMs, and excuse the acronyms, but that's what they're called.
I appreciated your glossary, by the way.
Thank you. But that confusion, first of all, that's not a concrete injury to the state. The state can't say that I'm confused, this is a procedural injury, but they're really saying here, and that's the Summers case, but they're really saying here is I might potentially, hypothetically, be confused. Look at it this way. A source within Michigan who is denied a permit or who has a permit in the process right now would not have standing to challenge this regulation because they themselves cannot show injury at this point. In the rulemaking,
what
the tribe...
What about the Sierra Club case that the state is introducing into the record? Is this something we can take into account?
Well, we don't think you can take it into account under Citizens against Ruining the Environment. That came in conjunction with the reply brief. But even if we look at that case proves the point. The so-called confusion about the AQRBs was that somehow through a letter submitted along with the original brief of the state of Michigan that there's a 300-mile radius. That 300-mile radius never comes up here. There's nothing to be confused about. Secondly, that decision found that they didn't have to look at the Potawatomi tribe because there were no impacts to Class 1 areas closer. What does that show? That shows that this has nothing to do with the redesignation of the Potawatomi land. It has to do with PSD requirements of how you treat Class 1, which is the same for existing federal Class 1 land. So there's nothing about this regulation which causes even a procedural injury there. If you look in the rulemaking, the tribe came to an agreement with the state of Wisconsin through the dispute resolution, which is not before this court jurisdictionally. But look at what they did. They did modeling as part of the regulatory process. They came to the conclusion under that modeling that, at least at this point, it appears that a pulp mill located more than 10 miles from Potawatomi land, from the tribal land, will have no impact on increments. And a 140-megawatt gas-fueled power plant located on the border of the land will have no increments. then how can a source in Michigan, which is located at the closest point, about 30 miles away, say that we're going to lose our permit, we're not going to be denied a permit because of impacts to the land, when the tribe has already determined, at least through initial modeling, that someone on the border of their land will not affect the increments.
Could you spell out the process that Michigan is now going to go through as the administrator of these federal standards? Somebody comes and says, I want to establish something, you know, a stationary source up in the, you know, the northwestern corner of Michigan, someplace, maybe not even in the Upper Peninsula, and at least potentially that might create air emissions that would affect the Potawatomi. There's a notification procedure, as I understood from your brief. The administrator of the EPA gets notified. What else happens?
Well, the first thing to note is that 5221 that's applied through this redesignation to the tribe land has nothing to do with Michigan's obligations. Michigan's obligations come from its own state implementation plan and 5221, which still applies there. So if you look to Michigan's regulations. But here's what they do. The application comes in, they take the application, and they mail it to EPA. And that's the end of their obligation with regard to AQRVs and
FLNs.
So then
it's EPA's responsibility to alert groups like the tribe?
That is correct. And then it's the tribe's responsibility to determine whether their AQRVs, their air quality-related values, are impacted. And then,
do they have to have published AQRVs before?
No, that's not. I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, they do not. And if you look at the process for federal land managers under 165, they do not publish it, their air quality-related values. They are very specific to the permit applicant, what project they're putting in, and they're very specific to the land. And the air quality-related values, although Congress said that visibility should be one of them for these types of lands, they're very different for the land. So it is completely speculative because we don't know if the tribe will ever raise air quality-related values as an issue with regard to any permit applicant that might come down the road.
Would anyone else have standing other than the tribe to raise those issues in relation to the Class 1 land on the tribe?
I'm not sure.
Sierra Club, could somebody else come in and say, we like to fish on the Forest County Potawatomi land? Or?
I'm not sure that they would, because the way non-federal air quality-related values are adjudged, if there's some dispute, is through the dispute resolution process in 164E, and that deals just with states and tribes being able to do that, being able to bring that type of action. So this brings us back to the standing issue. If you go to the second part, so we already talked about speculative. If you go to the second part, it has to come from the conduct complained of. Michigan is not suing over the redesignation. They are not saying that EPA exceeded its authority under the statutes in approving the redesignation or issued an arbitrary and capricious decision in issuing the redesignation. It is saying only that the ministerial act of where the redesignation was codified was in the wrong, if I may say, IP, in the wrong implementation plan. And that's it. If you replace the FIP with a TIP, none of these obligations change. Michigan's obligations don't change one bit. The so-called confusion is not cleared up. As the case they presented showed, they were dealing with different federal land, different Class 1 land. They are no more or less confused by any of these things than if it was a TIP. Nothing will change.
They are saying that none of this could have happened. In their view, the redesignation couldn't have been finalized, if I can say that, without a TIP. So I guess they are saying one key element is missing. And I wonder if, as you address that, you could also comment on the Arizona case.
Okay. First of all, there's no statute that requires a TIP. In fact, the opposite is true. The regulation, which comes directly from 301D, the statute, says we're going to issue a federal implementation plan when there is no TIP. The Arizona case, it's pretty clear. what was missing in the Arizona case was the last part, the regulation. I mean, any review of an agency action starts with the statute. They have authority to act. Did Congress grant them authority to act? 301D clearly says that. They, from 301D, they issued the regulation 4911, which clearly says that whenever it's necessary or appropriate to protect air quality, they can take action and issue a federal implementation plan, which is what they did here. Arizona versus EPA laid it out. Now, we disagree with the portion of Arizona versus EPA, which says that an implementation plan was required in that case from 164E. 164E clearly goes to dispute resolution, the result of a dispute resolution. The redesignation here did not occur as a result of the dispute resolution. It came about in a separate process.
But so are you saying then that you don't think we would have to actually create a conflict with the Ninth Circuit? I mean, or would we, in your view?
We think that Ninth Circuit was wrong in its reasoning, but even accepting that reasoning, if you follow their reasoning, the final portion, the regulation, is now in place. That's what that court said was missing. And it's now in place. There's clear authority for EPA to have acted. And certainly, under Chevron, its interpretation of its own statutory authority and its own regulations is not irrational. But we think it's clear. We think under Chevron 1, you never even get there.
Getting back to your standing argument,
yes.
Is it your position that a state always needs to point to a specific project that will be affected in order to have standing to challenge an implementation plan?
No, not necessarily. They could point to other things. In Massachusetts versus EPA, they pointed to effect to their lands from a regulation or the non-application of a regulation. So it could have impact directly to themselves somehow. I think that's hard in this case because their air gets better as a result of this Class 1 plan. But, you know, maybe there's a case where they can show some through affidavits, which are required, some monetary type of damage from this. We think it's a bit far-fetched, but it's certainly possible.
May I arrange for your colleague for his 5 minutes?
I was told that the red light would go on for my 15.
You're fine.
Okay, thank you. The final part of standing is that it has to be likely to be redress. And as Your Honor pointed out, I think if you say redressability is further delay, then maybe that's the case. But it's got to be redressed by what you're complaining of. What Michigan is complaining of in this case is, again, that ministerial act of where it was codified, that it should have been codified in a TIP. And not one thing would change if this land description was codified in a TIP rather than a FIP.
And I think you've covered this, but I just want to make sure I have this clear. Are the federal PSD regulations a FIP under the Clean Air Act?
Yes, they are.
And
is 5221 a FIP? Yes.
Right. I just wanted to make sure. And then Michigan maintains that the Act limits FIPs to gap-filling deficiencies. Would that be your view?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think that argument is that only FIP only exists under 110C, and that's not the case. We go back to what we talked about, which is 301D, which gave EPA the authority to issue regulations to deal with tribes in a different way than states. They passed 4911 and said that explicitly. And one of the ways of doing that, and in fact, Congress said, when you do it, directly administer it. What does that mean? That means you do it with a federal plan. What does that mean? That means you implement it. And that's what they did here. And 5221 is exactly that. Council talks about a FIP in Region 10. That's not a PSD FIP. That has nothing to do with this case. It has to do with what the rules about wood-burning stoves and things like that. 5221 is almost a mirror image of 51-166. 40 CFR 51-166 are the regulations that a state must put in its own PSD program. It's basically a mirror image, 37 pages of detailed regulations about the modeling that needs to be done, about the requirements for increments, et cetera. I see my time is almost up, and I'll hand it over to my colleague, Mr. Appel, counsel for the tribe. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Appel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. As we described in our brief, this is a matter of extreme importance to the tribe. Congress has recognized any tribe's right to redesignate their reservation Class 1. And it is abundantly clear that the only prerequisites for such redesignation are procedural. And it is further abundantly clear that every procedural requirement set forth either in the statutes or in the regulations has been satisfied here. The dispute, rather...
Satisfied, as I recall, long since. Weren't the hearings in 1995?
Well, there were actually a series of hearings, but 1995 was the EPA's first determination that the procedural requirements had been satisfied, and yet, because of the dispute resolution proceedings, we were delayed for more than a decade thereafter. So this is a matter that is critical to the tribe. And the only dispute before this Court appears to be the label to attach, not to the redesignation itself, but to the place where the announcement of redesignation can be found. Because redesignation itself is simply a change in the categorization of the particular area involved.
Well, wouldn't you agree, though, that the one result of the redesignation is it's at least hypothetically possible that a stationary source that wants to locate in Michigan will need to implement better technology so that there won't be as much in the way of emissions into the air, and thus the Class 1 status of the tribe will be achieved?
Hypothetically.
Okay. I mean, it must be that, because why bother with the whole process? That's what the tribe must have wanted.
The tribe does want to enhance the protection of its air. But while the Class 1 designation may have effects, at least on the applicants, I'm not convinced that it has effects on the permitting authority, at least not effects that are cognizable, but while it may have effects on the applicant, the type of plan by which the redesignation is announced does not have any such effects. I mean, consider, and I believe counsel for EPA has also alluded to it, but whether this was a FIP, a TIP, or even a SIP, you could throw a dart at a map of the state of Wisconsin, wherever it landed, particularly on the reservation. If you had the regulations in one hand, you could determine what rules apply. The increments applicable to the territory, to the reservation, would be the same. The permitting authority for sources seeking to locate in Michigan that could possibly affect the reservation would be the same, and that is the permitting authority is the state of Michigan. It is not the reservation. It's not the tribe, as the brief would tends to imply. The tribe would have the same rights to raise concerns about the effect of off-reservation sources on the air quality in its reservation, and the means of resolving those disputes would be exactly the same.
So let me ask, I mean, essentially then what you're saying is if suppose just north of the tribal lands, the state of Wisconsin, in lands governed by the SIP in Wisconsin, designated through all the appropriate procedures a Class 1 area, there would be no difference for the state of Michigan in its permitting dealing with the state of Wisconsin's Class 1 area and the tribe's Class 1 area. The process is about the same.
I would say approximately the same. The tribe raises Class 1 concerns by reason of Section 164. And there is generally a different, although highly parallel, procedure by which the state could raise concerns. But what I was saying is that simply, if you take the reservation, whether it be a TIP, a FIP, or a SIP, which is impossible, of course, that everything remains the same. And Michigan's argument seems to depend almost exclusively on the use of the phrase applicable plan. Well, the day before this redesignation came into effect, the applicable plan was a FIP. What possible reason is there to completely change the universe of regulations affecting the reservation simply in order to say this reservation is now Class 1. There is no reason in common, there's no common sense reason, and there is no justification in the statute for imposing that. Redesignation is simply the change of status of a piece of real estate. The immediate effect, that is to change the PSD implements, or increments, excuse me, takes place as a matter of law. And all of the elements of the existing plan applicable to the reservation itself remain the same. And it doesn't matter what those elements are, because they have to do with the issuance and regulation of permitting sources on the reservation itself.
Thank you, Mr. Apfel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move for the